Welcome, everyone, to our call. Thank you for joining us. This is Dr. Will Tuttle, and we have June 20th, 2019. This is the World Peace Diet Circle call that we're so, I feel anyway, fortunate to be able to share. And I can't wait to get into things here this evening. Welcome to everyone, wherever you happen to be. If you're sitting somewhere quietly, or if you're driving or walking, or maybe listening to this later. A lot of people listen, I know, to the recording. And so we're excited to just dive in here. We have a special guest coming on pretty soon, Beth Redwood and Daniel Redwood, our good friends that we've known for quite a few years, who are based now in Portland, Oregon, and they'll be joining us. And I'm happy to entertain any questions, comments, or concerns or challenges that any of you are having as well. And remember, you can just press star 6 on your phone if you'd like to raise your hand so I can see that you would like to say something, and I can unmute your phone. So I hope you're all doing well. It's always challenging times, I think, we're in right now with the population, the number of people we have and the technology we have and the domination of animals and ecosystems on such a large scale. So it seems like we're in the middle of a birthing process where things are getting apparently worse on the one hand, in many ways. There's so much news about environmental devastation as well as serious saber rattling, as well as a lot of people suffering from sanctions and so forth, political choices and economic choices. And yet there's also great strides being made, I think, in awareness of human consciousness here, an awakening and a healing that are happening. So that's the situation, it seems, and it's quite complex. We're joined a lot together now, as we are right now, by the technology that we have, which I think sometimes helps and sometimes really hinders our ability to communicate together as a society. And so that's an issue, I think, more and more with social media and the direct and indirect kind of censorship that seems to be happening. But in any event, I'm so glad we can still communicate together and communicate with our friends and family, with neighbors and colleagues. And each one of us, I think, can find our own way to put our values into action. That's really what it's all about for this lifetime that we have. And so you're all here because of your interest in veganism and in the World Peace Diet approach, which is to focus on the spiritual component as well as all the other components. I mean, it's all important, but including that also especially. So let's go ahead and start like we normally do with taking a couple of minutes just briefly here at the beginning to connect in a somewhat meditative way with our purpose here together for this call and also as individuals in our daily lives. So wherever you happen to be, please feel free if you can to take your attention within, perhaps closing your eyes if that's possible, and feeling our connection with each other. I love that. Just feeling the connection that we have at the heart level with each other, each one of us as an expression of eternal consciousness, each one of us as a radiant vehicle of awareness, of compassion, of wisdom and joy and freedom, healing, of awakening, an agent of positive change and transformation and communication and abiding in our true nature. No matter what's happening in the world outside of us, remembering that we're always abiding in our true home, which is eternal. And as Joseph Campbell said, eternal means beyond the delusion and the dualisms this present moment, which is really all there is, this present moment right now, the holy moment that we have, and giving thanks for the efforts that each one of us have made that brought us here to this point that we're joined on this call, giving thanks for all the struggles that we've gone through that have helped to temper and purify our consciousness, giving thanks for all of the guidance that we've received from people that are in our lives, both alive and those perhaps we've met through books and teachings in various ways, and giving thanks for all the efforts of the countless other activists and advocates who are in many cases risking their freedom and their comfort in order to help animals and help other human animals to have more freedom and joy and peace. We give thanks for all who have gone before us and those who are to come, that we're part of a procession of awakening on this earth of human consciousness. We give thanks for these beautiful animals, the beings we refer to as animals, and know that they are, like us, expressions of eternal consciousness with enormous capacities and with a yearning to fulfill their purposes as we have, that they can be our friends and teachers. We give thanks for their expression in our lives in countless different ways. And we give thanks for the ecosystems on this earth, this whole beautiful planet, the oceans and the forests and the valleys and rivers and lakes and streams, the Arctic regions, the rainforests, the whole interplay of climate and the universe itself, far beyond our comprehension, and the beauty of the stars at night, and the precious awareness that we have a few precious days and weeks and months and years on this earth to sing our song and to bring our message and our dance to the world, that we do our best and support others as well in doing our best to live authentically and to bring the unique frequency, the unique vibration, the unique message that we have, so that together we're making a resonant symphony of music for upliftment and for healing. We give thanks knowing that we're part of this awakening of human consciousness at this critical time. So thank you all again for saying yes to vegan living, for saying yes to questioning the official stories in our society that really create so much suffering for other beings that's completely unnecessary. Saying yes to kindness and compassion and respect, and to doing the best that you can to embody this. All right. Well, here we are. Thank you again. And so this is, as I said a little earlier, an opportunity for us to share ideas and to share what we have been finding is working perhaps for us in our lives, in sharing the message and also the challenge that we've been having, any questions or concerns. It's so challenging, really, being a vegan in a not-yet-vegan world, in a world where there's still an overwhelming majority of people who think nothing of taking out their wallets and paying for and thus starting this process of violence, which begins with us as consumers and ends with us as consumers, right? We're the beginning and the end. As consumers, we take out our wallets, we pay for it. That starts the process. Suddenly at the supermarket or wherever it is, the restaurant, they need more ham or they need more cheese because of our purchase. And so the order is given, and that order in the economic system is inviolable. It will happen. Somewhere an animal will be impregnated and her baby will be stolen, her milk will be stolen, and someone will be killed. And then at the end, we'll eat it. So we are the beginning and the end as consumers. And the great thing is, as citizens, we have the power to share these ideas, this awakening, with other consumers, other citizens, and our brothers and sisters here to bring a change, a positive change. And the irony that I keep running into more and more is that the more I actually set out to try to change people, the more they resist, and the more I work on changing myself to live what veganism actually is as compassion for all animals, including the non-human animals, as well as the human animals, as well as this animal right here that I am, the more respect that I have for all animals and embody this respect, the more effective I can be as a catalyst for positive change and planting seeds. So it's really great, I think, to have Beth and Daniel Redwood with us here this evening, because in my mind, they have been wonderful examples of this kind of a process of organically making an effort to bring the message of compassion and celebrate, really, the message of compassion in their lives in a variety of ways. So I'll say a few words about them, and then I'll go ahead and unmute their phone. And we'll have a little discussion with them. And then, of course, as we're going along, feel free to ask any questions you have of them, and then we'll have more time, of course, afterwards. And I'm happy to address those questions. So Daniel and Beth Redwood, we met originally way back in, I don't even know when. It was a long time ago, back in the, I don't know when at this point, maybe they know. But anyway, it was a long time ago. And I think they were, at that point, they were pre-vegans, and we were at a party at a mutual friend's, and I think we talked a little bit about the fact that we were vegans, and then eventually they came to a concert, I think a workshop that we were doing at Unity, and I think that helped. And also I remember that they watched that movie that came out at that time by Tribe of Heart, I think it was, the one with Harold Brown in it there, that I forget the name of it, the Peaceable Kingdom. Yeah, that was it. And I think that had a big impact. But anyway, it's always nice to see the various things that kind of trigger us, but I'm sure there were many things for many years going before that. And one of the neat things I remember was that right at the beginning, I had just written The World Peace Diet, and Daniel was the editor, had a position with a really big publication in Washington, D.C. It was monthly. I think it was called Pathways or something. It was one of those ones that just tells about all the sort of progressive things that are happening. And he had the position of every month doing an interview with a well-known writer or thought leader about something, and he went out on a limb and did one with me. I remember way back in the early days of the World Peace Diet, and I was so glad because we spent quite a bit of time in Washington, D.C. area. We were living in our RV back then, and I knew that magazine, so it was so great, actually, to see it, because everywhere we went, at the Unity Church and all the health food stores, they'd have piles of these, and people would use it as to know what's going on in the Washington, D.C. area that was of interest, that was about health and freedom and sustainability and liberation and so forth. And so right off the bat, we made a wonderful connection. He is, I'll say Daniel first and then Beth maybe. Daniel is well-known, I think, in the vegan movement, especially now because of his musical talents. Besides being a doctor, he's a chiropractic doctor, not just a doctor, but an educator, but he's also very a long-time talented singer and songwriter, guitar player, and so he's performed at a lot of different venues, the National Animal Rights Conference, Northwest Veg, of course, their Compassionate Thanksgiving, Vegan Mania in Chicago, lots of different sanctuaries. She's got an album, Songs for Animals, People and the Earth, and a new song, Just Like Us, which we played, I think, two months ago. And I sent out a link to that, and I'll include another link if you want to listen to it. And Beth did the words, apparently, for that. She's a wonderful writer and poet. So he has a website for music, and he's worked a lot in the peace movement in the past with Cesar Chavez. He's in the film. Some of you may have seen that film, Cesar Chavez, Respect for All, which features Genesis Butler, who is, I think, Cesar Chavez's niece. And it's a really great film. And so he's in that film, and he wrote a film actually for the farm workers, which was selected by the Smithsonian Institute for its collection of the anthems of the American underground. So he's kind of well known. And we've seen him for a while. They lived, as I say, they lived for many years in Virginia Beach, which is a kind of a hotbed of so-called spirituality, and but they were frustrated, as many people find themselves frustrated, that so many so-called spiritual people are eating animals. And then they were living in Lawrence, actually, in Overland Park near Kansas City for quite a few years, which I know is challenging for them. And now they're in Portland, and he's teaching. And he's actually, it's great because he can teach at the University of Western States, courses in plant-based nutrition, whole food nutrition, to these young doctors who are not vegans, and so he can really bring this vegan message in a very helpful, effective way, and it has a multiplier effect, of course, on the young, on students, because they go forth and everybody trusts their doctor for nutrition. And we've seen so many chiropractors that are the opposite of helpful when it comes to nutrition. So it's great, I think, that Daniel's been able to be a positive influence there as well. And then Beth is well known in the animal rights movement, I think, also for her graphic artist abilities. She's done a lot of great things for lots of different groups, for Melanie Joy, for us, for a bunch of different projects. And a lot of different sanctuaries for Veganuary and VegStock and the Interfaith Vegan Coalition. We have the Worldwide Prayer Circle for Animals. She works with us in that, Compassion Over Killing. United Poultry Concern, she works a lot with. And they're friends with Seth Tibbet of Tofurkey. She works with them. So they're really great. They've worked a lot They're involved with the Unitarian, or they have been, I know, involved with the Unitarian movement in Portland. And she's a writer with some essays in some of the vegan books, like Letters to a New Vegan, Judy Carman's book, The Missing Piece, Turning Points for Compassion, which was done by a World Peace Diet facilitator from Australia. So it's really great. I mean, that's a great networker. So anyway, they both have websites, and I'll have links to those also if you want to see her art. And they're both cat lovers and gardeners, and have done a lot of, as I've been saying, a lot of work to help the movement. So I'm going to stop there with singing their many praises and unmute the phone here, their phone, so we can share a few words together. So hello, Beth and Daniel. You're with us.
Hi, Will.
Hi there, Will. This is a pleasure.
Great. Yeah, I know. It's so great to have you both with us. And Madeline and I are longtime fans of your work, and glad that we can be your friends as well. And we've really just seen so many good things happening. I was just wondering if you could share with everybody who's listening, as you know, we're all kind of on the same page here, what you see as the things that you have learned through the movement over the years, what you see your primary contributions, you know, coming and you've done, and just a little bit about how you see yourselves in the movement. You know, I know it's a kind of a big question, but I just like to just let you kind of talk a little bit about where you've been and what you see perhaps coming, and what the challenges are that we're facing right now, because you guys are in Portland, which is, you know, you've seen a lot. I mean, you've been in not Lawrence, but in Overland Park, and now you're, which is sort of the opposite of Portland in terms of awareness. And tell us a little bit. It'd be great just to hear what you've, you know, a little bit about your journey and where you see yourselves going at this point.
Well, Beth asked me to speak first, so I'm going to. Before
great.
I answer your very meaningful and timely question, I want to say how grateful both of us are to the role you have played in our lives in opening us up to animals, to veganism, to animal rights, and that has just had a profound effect on both of us, and we are forever grateful. So thank you. 15 years. It was 2005.
Yeah. Wow.
2005. So we are entering our 15th year, I think it is. As to what we've seen and where we think the movement is and how we can contribute, as you said, that's a challenging question. I think in all movements, and I have seen firsthand, you know, movement against the Vietnam War, the farm workers movement, and other social justice movements between then and now, certainly including the animal rights movement. But I think in all of those, one thing that I wish it wasn't, but is unavoidable, is that people who are drawn together for good reasons in service of an important cause will have differences from each other. And that sometimes
right.
those differences can reach a level that that causes us to question, well, first of all, causes us to question whether we're actually on the same side. And for me, it's always been important to recognize that people are mixtures, that it's going to be extraordinarily rare that I find anyone with whom I agree 100% on everything. And so the question then is, what are the areas of common ground, of overlap, of the where the circles intersect? And that's where I want to put my main energy. That's not at all to deny some of the significant differences and schisms within the animal rights movement that have emerged in, you know, in the relatively short time that we've been part of the movement. You've perhaps seen more of them. But I think to the extent that we can sometimes force ourselves to remember what we share in common, what drew us together in the first place, that's to me the most important place to start. And that is about the animals. That's about caring for these fellow beings of ours. Now, I've been talking a bit. I want to hand this over to Beth in case she has something to add.
Thank you, Daniel. That was really very, very interesting and helpful. Thanks.
Hi. I guess that my answer is more about what it is I'm doing personally, and that for me is very connected to spirituality, my spiritual path, and my guidance that I receive about what I can do personally that is the most helpful thing that I'm getting guidance to do in that particular day. And, you know, I've been praying and meditating for many years to be useful to the animal rights movement and to helping animals be liberated from suffering. And so I have received guidance that has helped me write the words to songs lately. I wrote one yesterday, so and also to get really involved in helping sanctuaries, especially because I feel that sanctuaries embody the kind of paradigm shift that I think we're going through. If there's any hope of, you know, a new world and restoring Mother Earth, which is the whole feminine wisdom of nurturing and loving and caring and taking care of and being generous and serving and all of these beautiful qualities that I find in sanctuaries where animals are saved, are loved, are interacting, are available to communicate with me. I've become very close to a lot of animals who know me and I know them. And I feel like that's where, if I can take their photos, which is most of what I do on a regular basis, take photos of animals who have been rescued, who I feel are incredibly special and sacred beings, to have the karma to be the one out of millions who made it, millions, billions, or trillions in some cases, although I haven't met a lot of fish, actually. But I really try my best to tune in to my, what I consider my higher self, my soul's guidance, in terms of how I can be loving, how I can be helpful, how I can communicate with these animals, what it is that would be most helpful on their behalf. And so I have a regular, you know, Instagram page, and I post there a couple times a week, and I try to write what I feel when I try to make a heart connection with an animal and what they might want to communicate in terms of helping the movement, helping others of their species. I write that in my posts. I post on Facebook too. And I just feel like that's sort of the best I can do, because I have experience as a photographer, as a communicator, as a graphic artist. And so I also joined with a lot of vegan artists in the Art of Compassion Project, where we have exhibits. This is a global collective of vegan artists who exhibit in many different countries, and then they contribute any sales of any prints that have been sold to animal rights groups. So that's a very nice thing. But I can get so depressed by, you know, the news and the global catastrophe, and I just find that in meditation and guidance, I can tune into Mother Earth, to the world soul, to feminine wisdom, and I can try my best to bring that forth with any skills or tools that I might have available.
Wow, thanks. Thanks both of you for your sharing. I'm wondering if you can share any ideas that you use to help you, because both of you, seems to me, are very creative in your approach. I mean, you're teaching, you're creating music, art, and photography, and connecting with your spirituality. So maybe things that you, any tips, I guess, or any, and also I guess any challenges, but especially any ideas that could help people, because I think the path of bringing this message to people, you know, it really, I think it really does help the more we can cultivate our creativity. And so I was just, if you can say some more about your process, I think that would be so interesting.
Okay. I mean, I have for many years used a variation on the loving kindness meditation, wishing for the happiness of all sentient beings and freedom from suffering for all sentient beings. And in my prayers and meditation, I'm reciting those prayers, but specifically for animals. And after I do that, I say the compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. prayer
from
Your Will. And as I say that, I usually bring in the energies and the picture in my mind of not only Mother Earth, so that I'm tuned into, you know, what does Mother Earth, you know, this, so that we are connected and my love is there. And then picture people and animals who are resonating with me in terms of the message that I wish to convey. And one of them is Norm Phelps, always, you know, somebody who is so powerful and so meaningful to me in my life. But also I picture different animals who I've known who move me in such deep ways in terms of their sentience and their beauty and their magnificence. And so then I also try to envision like a rose gold light and feel my heart beating so that I'm tuned into sort of the rhythm of my own being and that light, and then express love to all, you know, unconditional love for nature, for animals, for people, and then connect, invite the soul of my being to connect with me, to guide me in what I can do. And I have been very blessed that images appear to me. So, you know, I can't totally tell people how to do that, but when I go to that space, I will see, for instance, today, you know, it was like, there's a calf who I know, it was like, oh, say this, you know, put out the picture of the calf and say this about her and her life and what that means. And yesterday I was guided to put out a picture of a sheep who I know. So that is my process, in case that's helpful to anybody.
Great. Wow, that's very interesting. So it's really something that you've just developed on your own, and it has very universal overtones to me. I mean, it's a practice of quieting your mind and actually visualizing the love and feeling that and sending it out, and then being open to a message and then acting on it and creating like Instagram messages and Facebook messages that help bring people's awareness to the particular beings at sanctuaries and through them, of course, to all of those. So you guys both, I think, really focus on spreading the positive primarily, right? I mean, it's the beauty of animals, showing the beauty of animals, singing about the beauty of animals. Daniel, do you have anything you'd like to contribute along those lines? Because I know you're teaching, and I'd love to hear a little bit about your teaching and also your music.
First thing I would say, and this has been something I've become increasingly aware of just in the last few months, is that for me at this point, the greatest challenge in my life is how to integrate and how to harmonize, if possible, the knowledge that we have, and by we, I mean all of us on this call, the knowledge that we have about the approaching catastrophe. I mean, it's on many levels, but in particular, the environmental collapse that's in motion, and which we're just seeing here in the West, the beginnings of. How to harmonize that, how to integrate that with carrying on with daily life. and in terms of how that affects my creative process, I would say that I have that in mind. I have the animals in mind. I have my hopes for humanity and all sentient beings in mind when I start playing a melody on the guitar and then wait to see what that melody is trying to say, what the words might be. I mean, for me, in general, the music has always come first and the lyrics have been an outgrowth of that, although with Beth having started to write lyrics lately, I've had the opportunity to go in the opposite direction, which is have some lyrics in front of me and see what music comes. So,
right. Yeah, that's a different thing.
Yeah.
Great.
I mean, those are two different models for creating songs, and, you know, they're both good ones. In terms of the teaching, I love teaching. I mean, I taught both chiropractic subjects, but particularly nutrition for senior students at a chiropractic college in the Midwest before we came out to Portland, which I'm so glad we got the opportunity to do. That's my opportunity to bring my message, you know, which has many parts to it, but definitely one part is about the animals, as well as human health. It's a chance to bring that message to people who don't already agree with me. And I know you have had a lot of experience in reaching out to others. I mean, this is a chance I have to do that. And it's always a balancing act in which, you know, you don't want to come on too strong too soon and basically burn their circuits and have them, you know, run screaming in the opposite direction. while also not holding back to the point where people don't actually know who you are and what you stand for. So
yeah.
I've had the opportunity, because I'm not just teaching in that program, I'm the director of this master's program in nutrition. And it's my first administrative job ever, but it's an opportunity to make sure that the people we have teaching are respectful of their students, allow all views to be stated. You know, no one has to agree with their instructor, because we have instructors like me, you know, who are whole food ethical vegans, and others who aren't. But, you know, we consider that our job is to make students as fully informed as possible, and then to think for themselves. But from my point of view, everyone knows from week one, day one of my whole food nutrition class, which all of the students in our program have to take early in the program, everyone knows that I'm a vegan and why. So, okay, Beth has something. Here, I'm going to give it to her.
Hi. I just wanted to add one thing that I hope is helpful to people, which is one of the things that I do spend a lot of time in my garden where I have beautiful, beautiful flowers growing most of the year. And I am really sensing the love that is the essence of all living things. And when I am in my garden, or I'm with our kitty cats, or I'm at a sanctuary, or I'm just meditating, that love, and then that love that comes from the world soul, that comes from the essence of all beings, that comes from the creator of the universe, that connects all of us through all the elements, through everything, I find that a very powerful way to connect to something positive that then can create art. And the song that I wrote recently, the Vegan Heart Song for the World Soul, connecting in with that love and inviting Mother Earth to communicate with me through that love, those words were just coming to me. I'd be in the garden and two lines would come. I'd be sleeping and lines would come. I mean, it was like it just needed to be said, but it comes from this love essence. And just one quick thing, I tuned into my garden the other day and just asked for a message, and it said, in the beauty you will find the love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wow. That's it. I won't even say any more, but that's, yeah, there's so much beauty if we can actually open up to it and be part of savoring, I think, really, of the beauty of nature and of animals. I want to just, I should have done it maybe sooner, but encourage everyone to press *6 again if you want to ask Beth or Daniel anything or make a comment, because that's part of the possibility here that we have. And maybe at this point, I'll just see. I'm trying to think if there's any other final. Maybe just go to that final point because it's now we've used a good amount of time. It's been great to hear about your process. And but do you have any final words for us about what you see you're doing, either you're doing in the future, or the movement, or anything else you'd like to share with everyone? You know, I know you guys have been on an amazing path and spreading beauty and love, and I'm so glad you told us about your connection with your spirituality, with sanctuaries, with your teaching, with your music. And I know this, you know, we all have challenges. Everyone who's on this call is, in a sense, on the same page that we're doing the best we can to bring the message to the world. And I really treasure what you've both shared so far in your process. But is there anything else you can think of that you'd like to share at all with everyone? Be nice. And there is actually one somebody has asked a question too. But go ahead and let's maybe answer that, and then I'll see what the question is.
Well, I think it's always this. The Buckminster Fuller that said, you know, don't focus on the obsolete old paradigm that's going away, but do what you can to build the new. That's what I'm trying to do. That's what I advise. That's how we're going to make a vegan world.
Right, right. Daniel?
Two thoughts. One is that I have discovered over many years of thinking certain things were going to happen, I've discovered that my crystal ball isn't better than anyone else's. So I hesitate to predict in terms of how I see my own role. It's basically I want to find the best possible ways for me to contribute, you know, either continuing things I'm doing or finding new things to do. I want to say one other thing, Will, which is that I love those prayer-like meditations that you do at the beginning of each of these calls. I find them deeply meaningful and powerful, and thank you for those.
Great. Yeah, thanks, Daniel, for saying that and for sharing all your ideas and insights and inspirations with us. I'm going to maybe just let that not say anything more about that. It's been really great. I want to just go ahead and let Lisa, I think we have Lisa, I'm muting your phone, Lisa. Do you have a question or comment for Beth and Daniel?
I do. Thanks, Will. I just wanted to thank you both. It's just so beautiful what you both shared. And I happen to have been from Overland Park. I live in the San Francisco Bay Area now. But I was born and raised in Kansas City and became a vegetarian when I was 7 years old and figured out where meat came from. And I have my own path toward also eating meat again for a little while in my teens, where I kind of fell unconscious and awakened again in my 20s. And so it's been a process. And so I've been vegan for about 16 years now. Mm-hmm. And actually the Kansas City area has also you know, it's been awakening itself. It's got some vegan restaurants and it's got the conversations happening there. But anyway, I wanted to make that connection. And
right.
I just also wanted to say, as we were talking, I didn't know you two, so I Googled you as you were talking. And Beth, I was looking at your pictures and they're so powerful. And it just really spoke to me, like, it's such a powerful way, I think, to help people make the connection with the animals, especially when you've got the eyes of the animal looking into the camera. I just really felt connected, kind of being to being, through your pictures. So I just want to thank you so much for that. And I followed your Instagram. I'll definitely share your photos. I also love the description of your spiritual connection and your practices and how that relates to the action that you take to support the animals and the information that you receive that way. And it's very, very inspiring. So thank you both so much. So I have an intention to support people in a kind of a healthy yogic lifestyle, spiritual mentorship, doing a lot of study in that area and a lot of my own practice, and also some health coaching there for that whole food vegan diet. And I've talked to some friends about it, and something that I'm running into is some friends of mine who were vegan for a period of time, some of them several years. And I've got three of them who've come back and very strongly saying that they had a extremely strong craving for meat after several years of being vegan. And after eating the meat, feeling a nourishment in a way that they hadn't been able to feel when they were vegan, and they feel so much healthier eating this meat. And of course, I don't have that experience at all. I feel extremely healthy on a whole food plant-based diet, but I don't know who really this question goes to. Maybe, Will, you could also chime in, but how can you help me respond to this? I found myself having difficulty responding to these people in my life.
Right. Thanks, Lisa. Beth and Daniel, do you have anything you'd like to say in response to Lisa's, what she said earlier, everything?
Well, thank you, Lisa, for your very kind words about my photos. I appreciate it.
I would say regarding those friends who have told you of their experiences, first of all, and I trust that you already embodied this, it's always important that we not deny what someone is telling us their experience is. Now, what I wonder, if I was talking directly to that individual, I would want to know more about what their vegan diet included and didn't include, because it may well be that it's possible to have healthier or unhealthier versions of a vegan diet, and the variety matters a lot. There may be certain, whether it's certain amino acids, certain other macro or micronutrients, vitamins, minerals, and so on, they may have, been lacking or insufficient in some aspect of that. So without knowing more detail, it's hard to have an intelligent response. What they're telling you is not unique to them. There are other people who report similar experiences. And if I have the good fortune to be interacting with them, I want to talk about that. What was this vegan diet? I mean, one of the most interesting bodies of research that's emerging, largely from some researchers around Harvard, within the last few years, Frank Hu, H-U, and Ambika Satija, S-A-T-I-J-A, these are researchers at Harvard and Beth Israel, I think it is, hospital. What they've been doing is comparing what they call a healthy vegan diet or healthy plant-based diet to an unhealthy one. And all of those benefits that you and I and Will and all of us attribute often to vegan diet only is really true if it's a healthy vegan diet. And I'm not going to go into all the details at this point, but that's an important distinction. And look, is it possible that someone's eating what I would consider an ideally healthy vegan diet and still doesn't feel good on it? Yeah, it's possible, but I think it's far more likely that there was something about the vegan diet that those people were following that was inadequate.
Thanks, Daniel. That's really interesting. And I think that bears repeating. And I think I want to write that down. H-U, and what was the other fellow?
The other is a woman, I believe. Last name is Satija. S is in Sam, A-T-I-J-A. I can send you information on this.
I can maybe include that.
Students on this. It's really important and really crucial distinction.
Right, yeah, exactly. I think that's very important that we're on the health, it's called so-called health cruise, just recently with leading plant-based nutritionists like Caldwell Esselstyn, Rip Esselstyn, and Michael Clapper, and T. Colin Campbell, and a bunch of others, MDs, and they were all basically saying the same thing in a variety of ways, that it's really important to be aware of the foods that we're eating, and just getting away from animal-based foods is a huge step in the right direction, but it's not the only thing. And there's a little bit more I'd like to say about that, too. But maybe, well, at this point, I'd like to just thank you both so much for joining us.
And thank you.
It's really been great. We're looking forward to seeing you at the Portland Veg Fest. We'll be coming up in, I think it's in early October. And keep the great work you're doing, and we'll put links to your websites. And really encourage everyone, if you have a chance, to go to Daniel and Beth's, Daniel's Music and Beth's Art, their websites and Facebook pages, and we can keep learning from each other. That's so precious. Thanks so much for sharing.
Thank you, Will.
It's been a pleasure.
All right. Yeah, really, it's been great. Okay, talk to you later. All right, and so I'll go ahead and maybe say a couple of words. Thank you, Lisa, also. Thanks, Lisa, for your input and your question, and I just want to just also say that, and this is actually something that came up during the month when one of the people in our circle sent me an email with a few different questions, and one of the questions is similar to what you were asking, Lisa. What, you know, about the various manifestations of people who are on a plant-based diet or a vegan, you know, vegan way of living, and for some reason either they die young, so not really young, or maybe young, or kind of young, or they don't feel well and they get off the vegan diet. They say they don't feel well and they get off. And I think there's a couple of things that are important to say that Michael Clapper emphasizes, for example. Also, in his research, he's done really a lot of research with people clinically. Just they come into the office and they want to be vegan, or they're already vegan. You know, like maybe they're born and raised eating a lot of meat and dairy and eggs, like a lot of us. And then they see a video and they want to, okay, now I want to go vegan. And they have a hard time sometimes adapting. And he said, he emphasizes really over and over again that people have a lot of conditions that exist in their body that are there because of the way they were forced to eat growing up. You know, they have, you know, hypoglycemia or various allergies to all kinds of beans and vegetables, perhaps, or, you know, various things that really are not natural. I mean, they're a result of their upbringing, and that can make it very difficult for these people to transition to a plant-based way of eating because their body has had, you know, from the time they've started eating solid food, they got, you know, just blasted with lots of saturated fat, cholesterol, toxic pesticide, herbicide, and fungicide residues. Their body had to go into a mode of adaptability and also addiction, really, to these foods. And so when they want to switch over to human food, basically, with food that we're designed to eat, plant-based food, the body just, you know, rebels, and it's not used to that, has a hard time. And so I think it's important to just be, you know, be aware of that ourselves and share these ideas with other people. And like Daniel said, it's really important, not so much, I think, what we say, it's really more how we say it and who we are as we're saying it. We're not trying to change them or prove them wrong or deny their experience or anything like that, which is a natural tendency, really. When we're if I'm a healthy vegan like I've been for the 39 years, and someone says they tried being a vegan and it didn't work, you know, my natural tendency is, well, you didn't do, you obviously didn't do it right. You know, you have, yeah, you know, like you know, what were you eating? And sort of argue with them, like, well, you know, come on. I mean, don't you know animals are suffering? And you know, get with the program here. And but the thing is, everyone, like Daniel was saying, everybody is different. But I do think it's important also to recognize that we're not that different, right? I mean, we all have the same basic body and the same basic intestines and stomach and systems. And so this idea that, you know, everybody is unique, like every snowflake is unique or whatever, you know, elephants and other, you know, animals don't all go eating different food because they're unique. We have the same basic design. And there's a huge emphasis, I think, by non-vegans and also by quite a few vegans as well who make money selling supplements to always repeat this narrative that everybody's unique, and it's a way of making money. You know, it's a way of, you know, you can't sell supplements if you don't have that narrative that we're all unique. So you know, you find out what you need and say, and here I am, I have it here for you to buy. You can buy it from me. You know, so there's all this research that's being done. There's been quite a flap lately about Joel Fuhrman. I don't know if you're aware of it. Jeff Nelson has been calling him out, and I think rightfully so, quite honestly, for you know, selling all these supplements and fudging research to make it look like you need to buy, you know, his supplements, or that his way is the only right way to do, you know, a nutritarian diet. You have to do it that way. You have to get lots of vegetables, and if you don't, if you eat just basic plant-based foods and lots of starch, and, you know, you're not going to get what you need. And I think, you know, we have to just be a little bit, you know, questioning of those, of the underlines. We live in a system where people are trying to make a living, trying to make money, and some people want to make a lot of money, which is, you know, nothing wrong with that, I guess. But there's, you know, we're very much at the mercy in many ways of nutrition. Most people don't feel like they're experts, so we trust the experts. And so you have people who are MDs, or who even very often who are not MDs, but are perhaps chiropractors or natural, you know, NDs, natural doctors, holistic doctors, and they're selling supplements very often. And so the whole narrative is that, you know, come to me, I'll give you tests, I'll test your blood, I'll see what you're deficient in, you buy this, you buy that, you buy the other. And what Jeff Nelson's pointing out, which and other people have been pointing out too, is that our body is enormously adaptable, and we don't necessarily have to buy into the sort of reductionist idea that we need to eat certain foods to get certain nutrients, or do we need to get a certain amount of certain nutrients. Yeah, Colin Campbell really is talking a lot about this lately, and I think he's right personally, that he says we'll never know the infinite complexity of food, and we'll never know the infinite complexity of human health. I mean, it's incredibly complex. He said we'll never know. We are so rudimentary in our understanding at this point. We're so almost, I don't know what the word is, barbaric in a way. I mean, Our understanding of nutrition is so primitive, and we're so programmed by a reductionistic scientific model that the body is this machine, and you have to just put certain nutrients in a certain way to create health. And what he's saying is that we have to look more holistically and realize that there are not only all the nutrients that we know about in foods, but there are many other nutrients we haven't even discovered yet. And even the ones we've discovered, there are like thousands of them, probably millions of compounds and substances, and they all interact in profound ways with each other. And our body has an immense wisdom of how to use and how to store and how to reuse and recycle nutrients. and that you know, it's the old, the longest lived people in the world, the healthiest, like the Okinawans and so forth. You know, they do blood tests on those people, and they're deficient in this, and they're deficient in that. It doesn't stop them. They're still living to be 110 years old and healthy and happy. And you know, they're not like, I remember, I mean, it's so interesting. Like, you know, we actually, Madeline and I bought land and built a little house in Vilcabamba, Ecuador, which is in John Robbins' book. It's one of the five, I think it is, places on planet Earth where people live to be the oldest and healthiest. And, you know, Vilcabamba is renowned. It's the Valley of Longevity. People live to 110, 120, 130 years old traditionally. And it was discovered by National Geographic people back in the 1950s. And then a lot of hippies and raw foodists went there in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And the people were active. They were eating a plant-based diet. They didn't even have electricity, really, in that valley. It was they were just growing their own food. They had very strong family relationships. They were little farmers. They had really clean water that was rich in minerals coming from the Andes. We went there right around the time I was writing the World Peace Diet, and we were going to move there because we thought, what a great life, you know, just move there and grow our own food. And but then when the World Peace Diet came out, we realized that we have another thing to do. So we're we still have the house, but we have people from Michigan are living in it. But what's so interesting is that what happened was this guy went down there from Japan who just kind of fell in love with the people. This was back in the 80s, I guess, before it was really well known. And he thought, these people are so wonderful. You know, they're living their lives. They're old. They're healthy. They're innocent. They have such strong family bonds. He was a philanthropist. You know, he wanted to help them. So he donated like $2 million to build them a clinic. There was no clinic. There was no doctor. You know, there wasn't any doctor at all. You know, people are healthy and happy. And so they built a clinic, and that was it. That was the end of it. I mean, that was the end of it. It's the people now, they're lucky if they live to be 80 years old. And, you know, they started doing blood tests. They started telling, oh, you know, you need this, you need that. They started getting all self-conscious about their health. And, you know, it just destroyed. I mean, it probably wasn't the only thing that destroyed it. There was other things that happened, too. They built a road, and, you know, and then, I mean, there was a road, but they paved the road. And pretty soon there was Coca-Cola coming in and other things. So, you know, it's a variety of things. But the whole, you know, the whole culture came in. So we're born into that. You know, we are born into this idea of drugs and pharmaceuticals and supplements. And the body isn't supposed to be eating supplements. I mean, this is a totally bizarre thing, or superfoods, really. I mean, getting a high dosage of something all at once. So so when people say they're, you know, even people who say that they were vegans and they were eating a really ideal vegan diet, I mean, what the heck is that, really? I mean, what is it exactly? I guess, you know, they'd have to do some kind of a very in-depth food diary of exactly what they're eating every single day, and it would have to be looked at by somebody, you know, competent in vegan nutrition, someone, I think, trained in a whole food plant-based way of eating. And who could then, you could then, you know, start to talk intelligently about what they were doing. And usually it's problems or excess. You're eating too much of something, not getting enough, too many supplements, too many superfoods, who knows what. But what we've found in our lives as the years go by, and we are doing the best we can to stay abreast of all the changes that are always happening. One year they say this, then a few years later, oh, that's wrong, now it's this. It's always changing. We've been, you know, we've been in this movement for over 40 years, and we've seen how things keep changing. So that's another reason. So I don't go. I would never go to a doctor and have, like, blood tests. I wouldn't. I mean, I don't buy into all that stuff. But some people do, so it's okay, you know, if people want to do that. But I just think the best thing to do is to eat as close food as close to its natural state as we can. So organic is really important. Whole foods is really important. basic, you know, start, I think, you know, I really think that John McDougall's work is very good, the idea of eating plenty of starch, because starch is the fuel that burns to glucose, which is where we get our nutrients, right? So, our energy. And then, you know, vegetables are rich in vitamins and minerals. And all these foods have essential fatty acids. Vegetables do. Fruits are, of course, good. But the thing is, when someone says that they tried being a vegan for 3 years and didn't work and they crave steak and they had a piece of chicken or whatever it was and they felt so much better, and like, as they talk about in the World Peace Diet already, there's no point in arguing with them. Just, you know, what I would suggest is just emphasizing our own truth. I'm so glad I discovered that the only reason I was eating animal foods all those years that I was doing it was because I was just following orders. I'm not doing it anymore, and it's so fantastic. It's just so great. I feel healthy, and it's great knowing I'm not taking my wallet and paying for an animal to be impregnated against her will and have her baby stolen and be killed. And just only use I statements. I'm just delighted that I'm not contributing to that, and I'm so healthy. And you say something, you know, like I'm glad that I did my research to find out about healthy vegan nutrition, and it's not complicated. It's not difficult. The whole idea is to question the narrative in Western society, which comes out of a herding society. It's based on reductionism and materialism, domination and exploitation of animals and ecosystems, and the sacred feminine dimension of life, which sees the interconnectedness of things, and realize that our bodies have magnificent wisdom in nutrition. And that I realized that I had been abusing my body for the first 20 or 30 years of my life when I was eating standard American diet. And so it would take a number of years to purify and heal. I spent time fasting, you know, I did a lot of fasting to cleanse, both regular, like water fasting, juice fasting. And I was very careful to only eat and just say, you know, what it is, you know, what I did. Just use I statements, because as soon as I say you, whatever, it's going to, I think, cause people to just react. And the thing is, we don't know the psychology. It's all psychology, basically. I mean, if someone, it happens over and over again. People move to a plant-based way of eating for ethical reasons very often, or for health reasons, or for environmental reasons, whatever it is. And then they think it's not working, but there's a lot of other things going on. They're not living in a vacuum. What about their husband or wife or their parents or their coworkers? How are they taking this fact, the fact that this person is different? You know, very often, if we really can look deeply, if we have like the crystal ball and we can see into the deep structure of their unconscious mind, they don't like being vegan. I mean, it's messing with their relationships. It's messing with all kinds of things. So they want to find a way to get out of it. And so they just start craving meat. And then it's a placebo effect. As I described in the World Peace Diet, the more repulsive something is, the more powerful, more successful it is as a powerful placebo. So when someone who's a vegan actually eats the flesh of a fish or a chicken, it's extremely repulsive to them on one level, but that makes it all the more effective. And they say, wow, I had this miraculous transformation. Now I know I'm one of those people that just has to have some meat, you know. And then they're free, right? Then they can be in harmony with their family when they go to Thanksgiving. You know, most of this is unconscious. It's all unconscious, really. So much people are not conscious. People aren't meditating in our society. People are driven by currents. They don't even have any idea. But if we confront them on it, they'll, you know, it's probably not going to work, because they don't need, you know, they can just say, well, I tried and it didn't work. And they'll have all kinds of people supporting them. We have that, you know, billion-trillion-dollar industries, the pharmaceutical industry, the fast food industry, the chemical industry, the petroleum industry, they're all supporting this. There's plenty of books being written and videos being done to support people leading this, you know, leading veganism. And it's understandable why. The fact that anyone goes vegan and remains vegan, to me, is actually enormously, I'm just so happy and so optimistic and so It's just cause for celebration, because when you think about the unconscious drive that we have to fit in and be like everybody else and be part of the tribe, when you think, I mean, I know Daniel and Beth, first, I won't go into it, but they've suffered in their families because of the fact that they're vegan. Many of us have. It's better now, but I went through decades of suffering because of my family didn't think it was a good idea. It would be great to say, oh, gosh, I tried, it didn't work, you know, and it's an easy escape. And many people take it, I think, for various reasons, and consciously or very often unconsciously. So these currents in consciousness are powerful, and that's why I think the more people who go vegan, the more people will go vegan. I mean, it's just a matter of trying to get the critical mass to the point where we have enough, you know, authority figures like doctors and movie stars and film makers and whatever, showing that, I keep waiting for this film by James Cameron to come out where he really shows that the strongest, healthiest people on the planet are vegans. And we have to keep bringing this truth to the world, because there's enormous payback. Like John McDougall says, people love good news about their bad habits. There's an enormous payback in people who are eating animal foods or new vegans, relatively new vegans. If you've only been a vegan for a few years, that's still new. And there's a big tendency to go back again. You know, I understand. I mean, you're kicked out of the tribe on some level, and people don't like that. Our whole identity, our purpose, getting ahead in the job. If I don't eat the meat, I'm not going to be liked by my boss. Who knows? There's so many things, and so the best way to talk about this, I think, is to use I statements. I realize that, I know what you mean. I had a craving for meat too, but then I realized actually it was just that I didn't want to be different from my family. And I realized that if I went back to eating animals, I really wouldn't feel good about the fact that I would be paying to slaughter turkeys and just use I statements. And I realized, you know, if I went to the doctor, and this happens very often, people go to the doctor and they say they're vegan. The doctor says, gosh, you know, it's not good. You look at that, they do blood work, and you're not getting enough B12, you're not getting enough iron, whatever they say. You should really be eating some red meat. You should be eating some fish. But use I statements. I realized that if I went to my doctor and had blood work done and they told me that I wasn't going to be healthy unless I ate the flesh of animals, I realized when I heard that, you know, the doctor was telling me I have to eat, I have to eat some dogs, I have to eat some horses, I have to eat some cats. If they had told me that, I would have reconsidered. But then since they told me I have to eat some chickens or some fishes, and I said, sure, okay, the doctor said so, I'll go along with it. You know, why? Why would I go along with one and not the other? I just thought about that, but only use I statements. And then I realized that, gosh, you know, I have to go more deeply into this. And I'm so glad I did. I did more research. I realized that if I tweaked my way of eating and also worked in meditation with some of the fears that I had, that I was able to stick with it, and it's so great. I'm so glad I did. You know, that kind of thing. We just tell our own experience. That's all we can do, I think, really, ultimately, is tell our own experience and try to agree and not disagree, not argue, not fight, but tell our own experience and basically agree that we hear the person, we understand where they're coming from, we went through something similar ourselves, or other people we know have gone through things similar, and the good news underlying everything is that we are designed to eat a plant-based way. And sure, there's lots of vegan junk foods. There's lots of wounded bodies who go vegan and then have problems because their whole digestive system and circulatory system and everything else is, and autoimmune systems have been corrupted and harmed. And now when we change everything, turn the tables on them, you know, they don't know, they have a hard time. It takes a while, you know, for the changes to happen. So that's why I think very often it's good, in the long run, research seems to show that too, that the people who really stick with being vegan usually don't do it overnight. Usually they do it in stages. I did it. I was a vegetarian for 5 years, and then went vegan. And I did it pretty much in stages. I did vegan overnight, I did vegetarian overnight, but then vegan somewhat in stages. So I think all of these things all go together in helping us to understand how to respond to these situations. And I see all these people asking questions, and it's getting late. It's always the same problem. There was a few things. Let me go ahead and answer these questions. There's somebody, area code 323. I'm going to unmute your phone. Hello.
Oh, that is I, Will, and it's Lily.
Oh, hi. Hi, Lily.
Hi, Will. I'll just make a quick statement.
Uh-huh.
Being vegan since I read the World Peace Diet, and only since I read the World Peace Diet, which is almost 13 years now, was an overnight thing for me, and I wasn't even looking for being vegan. I wanted to be a vegetarian, but I was a wannabe. World Peace Diet completely revolutionized. It just has almost cleaned out my whole brain and got me... it made me an overnight vegan, as well as my husband. And we have had blood work over the years, and the blood work has been perfect. My husband is almost 94, and I'm 72. And
wonderful.
Our blood work is perfect, and I've never craved anything except being vegan. In fact, being vegan is getting me through one of the most difficult times of my life. It got me through the death of my mother, my father, almost my sister, almost my husband dying. That I'm going through a very difficult health challenge that is going to get resolved. But the only thing that keeps me strong and makes me a warrior in life rather than it's somebody that says, I've had it, you know, I'm done for, is being vegan. It's the only thing, because I know I'm living my life with integrity, and I know that being a solid vegan through every cell of my body gives me the strength to endure anything that's thrown at me till the day I die. And I know that, and I've known that now for almost 13 years since I read The World Peace Diet, which had been written about a year prior to my reading it. So... thank you, Will. And that's all I really have to say. My husband and I our health is perfect. Our health is actually perfect.
Well, that's beautiful, you know, and that's exactly the right answer to anyone, I think. You know, I mean, just say you're speaking your truth, and that's the same truth, I think, the underlying truth that here I am. I'm not going to, there's no way I'm going to pay someone to stab an animal to get some kind of fictitious nutrient.
And, you know, when you said placebo, being vegan is the greatest placebo there ever was, because you know that you're not involved with the killing machine. You already know that. And just that knowledge can make you shine. It gives you a way of being in the world that is beautiful. And I do not blame people for going back. All I know is that they never were if they can go back. They have to.
Right.
There has to be a complete transformation of the spirit before you realize that, you know, that you could never go back no matter what. But that doesn't happen to everybody. I was blessed, and so is my husband. I was blessed. It happened. Mm. He was reading the World Peace Diet to me while I was cooking, and I said, we're vegan, aren't we? And he said, yeah, we're vegan. And that was almost 13 years ago, and it's never changed. I've never smelled a barbecue and wanted barbecue. I used to smell it and want it all the time. Never smelled it and wanted it. Want to go the other way. I don't want to smell it at all. I know what it is, and I don't want it. So anyway, I'm going to get off the line and let somebody else have something to say.
Okay.
Much love to you and Madeline.
Thank you.
For transforming the quality of my life forever till I die. Thank you.
Thanks, Lily. Yeah, that's a really such an important point, Lily, you just made. And I think, you know, not to say anything about the fact. I guess what I want to say is, she read the World Peace Diet, and I think these people who go back, you know, for the reasons like we heard, they haven't read the World Peace Diet, right? I mean, in the sense that what I mean by that is they haven't made the effort to understand the big picture of our society and our abuse of animals and how devastating it is to animals, to our ecosystems, to our health, and to our spirits, and to our minds, and to everything, and how unnecessary it really is. So if people haven't been educated on that level, if they haven't had the opportunity to open to the deeper understanding, then they don't have a strong foundation, really. And it's easy to go back because they just don't have the understanding. That's why I really want everyone to read The World Peace Diet, in the sense that I would love it because, like, when we meet raw foodists or anyone who's doing apparently vegan way of eating, but they're doing it for just health reasons or other reasons, and they don't have that deep foundation, then I'm concerned that they'll go back, you know. So thank you, Lily, for saying that so well. Okay, so we have Andy. I can see. Yes, I just unmuted your phone. Hi.
Oh, Will?
Yes, hi.
That me? Hi, it's Andy.
That's you. Yeah.
Hi. First, thank you to everybody for everything that's been shared. I wanted to bring up, and I'm so glad these questions were brought up, of people going back to eating meat. And I know I emailed you about the question about stress and certain vegans that are not healthy that you would think would be healthy. And so a couple of thoughts. One is, especially because it was brought up that, you know, we seem to need this tribe and this connection with people, and that's why people go back. And the very thing I was bringing up that I could sure use, and I know a lot of other people could use, would be counseling and coaching and just in life, in general, for life things,
yes,
even unrelated to vegan things. But I would love to see, like, an organization started that offered, like, maybe free counseling and therapy or coaching on the phone, especially to new vegans, where they could suddenly have a new tribe to connect with and not feel like they're missing out on that family or something. And, you know, and so that would be one aspect of counseling and helping people connect to new people and, you know, getting a full support in their whole vegan lifestyle. But also, you know, just the other aspect of the people that are vegan that are so stressed, like myself and other people included, because we're devastated by living the life of insanity, surrounded
right,
by people that, you know, are torturing and murdering animals and, you know, very aware of it and not willing to change. And so I guess I would love to see that, a whole, like, organization, let's say, where, you know, how PETA is run by donations and some of these other animal rights organizations. I wonder if something like that could help more and more people to go vegan and to stick with it.
Right. Okay. Let me just say that there's a sanctuary in upstate New York called Catskill Animal Sanctuary. And there's a program that they're just starting. They've actually started it. And it's actually free at this point for anyone, and they're looking for people to be vegan mentors to help people who are new vegans, or people who are considering becoming vegan, or people who are new vegans, or people who are vegans but having challenges. So I was just in touch with the people there. There's a guy named Ray, and then the woman founder, and they actually we did an interview. What I need to do here, I guess, is get more interaction between our work and theirs, because she really asked me to, and you're reminding me to do this because I've been so busy I kind of spaced it out, that she would like people who are World Peace Eye facilitators, anyone who's interested in being a mentor, they really need mentors. And also, if we know anybody that needs support, they have people who can be mentors for those people. So I should get the link. I don't want to do 10 things at once here right at the end of the call, but I think you can probably find it at Catskill Animal Sanctuary.
Oh, I wrote it down. Catskill Animal Sanctuary. Did you say it's New York or where?
Yeah, it's in New York. It's in upstate New York, okay. Socrates, New York. And it's a great place. And
okay.
Yeah, I think, but I just don't have time to look it up. But there's
oh,
a name.
Okay. I can Google it.
Yeah. There's a name of their I'm putting it in right now, but I don't think it's probably a good idea. But anyway, they have a program that's designed for mentoring, and it may not be on their main website. I'll look it up and I'll put it in the notes.
Okay.
Because I think it'd be it's a nice thing for people, and it's just getting off the ground. So but I think more and more we need to find ways to support each other. And those of us who have experience, it's a really nice feeling to help new people, help encourage them and inspire them and inform them also. And then, of course, I think it would be nice, quite honestly, if they could get some funding for this, and then people who are mentors, could perhaps get some at least some reimbursement or financial consideration for the time that they're spending to help people. So that's something that I will look into more. So thanks so much for bringing that up, because I really think that's important. And you had also asked in your email about a few people. I was just going to mention, I'll just mention it briefly, Jay Dinshaw. Some of you people know Jay. I knew him quite well. He had a heart attack at 66 years old, and he was the founder of the American Vegan Society, and everybody was kind of shocked. How could a vegan, 66 years old, have a heart attack? But I think, Michael Clapper did some research on him and how he lived, and also Michael Greger. And in general, people all agreed that Jay was just extremely driven guy. He never stopped. I mean, I think he had high blood pressure because he only had one speed, and that was like fast. And he was just constantly going. And I don't think he ate the healthiest either. He just was so driven. He was a wonderful guy, but he was just hyper. He was really a hyper guy. So, you can't reduce our health just to one thing, right? I mean, food is a big part of it, but it's not the only thing. The state of our consciousness is important. Whatever wounds we have endured in the past can have repercussions. And there's also environmental contaminants that people have, even vegans, perhaps like, my father wasn't a vegan, but he worked in an old mill that had asbestos, and he died. His lungs, it was just caught up with him, and his lungs just dissolved because of the asbestos. So there are many different things going on, and we have to be careful to be too reductionistic about any kind of a thing. And you also asked about this woman's son. Gentle World. She was, I knew her pretty well too. And actually she had a good long, full life. I mean, not real long, but she was close to 80 when she passed. I think she was 79 or something like that. But, I did ask actually, I sent an email to the people at Gentle World and asked, and they said that one of the problems actually in Hawaii is that there are extremely high levels of glyphosate in the water and everywhere from Roundup, because it's owned, a lot of Hawaiian islands are owned by Monsanto, and they do a lot of testing of all kinds of toxic chemicals, and her blood was full of toxic chemicals. Even though she was a vegan, she had very high levels of glyphosate and other things. So I think, living in a toxic environment, it takes its toll, whether we're vegan or not. I mean, that's one of the reasons going organic is important. But even then, it's sometimes difficult. So, There's many different factors we have to take into consideration with all these different things.
Okay.
And also, you know, anyway, the other thing, like you asked about George Burns, and, you know, he lived, you know, and we've all heard the story of the 100-year-old man,
yep,
or woman drinking and smoking and everything else. I always remember the LD50 test. I mean, just remember, you know, the LD50 test is a test that they unfortunately still do. It's not quite as popular,
the rabbit
but
test.
They still do it. Yeah, they give a toxic chemical to animals, to rabbits or mice or whatever, and they start off with a relatively small amount, and then they keep increasing the amount of toxin that they're giving, you know, 1 gram, 2 gram, 5 gram, 10 gram, 20 gram, whatever. And the LD50 is the amount of that toxic substance that it takes to kill 50% of those beings. So... Mm-hmm. So the basic idea to understand is that there are some of those rabbits or mice that you give just 1 or 2 grams, they're going to die. You know, they die. They're the early dyers. Then maybe 50% die when they get like 30 grams. But there's some you can give them, you know, 150, 200, 300 grams, and it still doesn't kill them, right? I mean, that's well understood. So we just have to understand that. I mean, there's some people that can take a lot of toxins. They can drink and smoke and eat a lot of meat, and they're at the far end of the curve, right? But that doesn't mean it's a good idea. It's toxic. It'll kill half the people.
Right.
So that's just that basic understanding, I think, helps put things into perspective, too.
Okay.
When we talk about healthy people, you know. We can share those. So thanks, Andy. I have there's one other person
thank
I was
so much.
Hoping
thank
to get
you
to.
Very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Right. Okay, and it's really time for Nancy. Okay, Nancy. Hi, Nancy. You still there?
Hi. Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello?
Yep.
Hi.
Yes. Yeah,
thank
I can
you.
Hear you. Yeah.
I'll make this quick. I you made an interesting comment about how it's often people transition in stages. And I think that's really true, and I think it's really important that we understand that when we're doing vegan advocacy, because as painful as it is to, like, not see people just go vegan right away, I think it's really important to support that they're saying they're transitioning. I say, that's great. That's fantastic. You know, let's keep going and just be really encouraging that way, because at least they're not coming up with, you know, baseless excuses. And,
right.
Like I'm organized a vegan social buffet and open mic night. I took this group over from someone else, and there were a lot of non-vegans in the group, and they would come. And so I'm being very careful about what's being presented in the open mics, and I don't want anything that's going to be, you know, negative in any way or talk about, you know, the horrors of animal agriculture, even though it's important to see that. My goal is to associate eating vegan food with pleasure and joy and social company and something they can feel really good about, because the horrible things push us away, but it's the joy and the pleasure that pulls us forward and keeps us going.
Right.
And that's why, you know, being addressed, like some people have had such a hard time going vegan, because it does end up, you know, causing problems, and they feel like they're the odd one out. And there's reasons like that. And so, but I do believe that there are people that, you know, were vegan and even did understand at least as much as they could about that. But the negativity, the loud roar of thunder of society mm-hmm. can be overwhelming for people, and you know they just shift back into the denial again because just for whatever reason, you know. But mm-hmm. I also think that we see veganism growing, and the word vegan is splattered all over the place, and I've seen an enormous positive response, you know, coming up. And I got accepted into a couple of farmers markets with my business, Botanic Cuisine, and they're so excited that I have a plant-based vegan business.
Wonderful.
And that's what got me in, yeah. And so I really think, and I've said this before, that we're coming on to a different kind of people. Like, there's this population curve, it's a bell curve where there's the early adapters, the starters, and then mainstream, and then the laggards. And we're coming into the mainstream area, and I think it's a different approach. Like one person, I'll try to be quick, wanted to sing an animal liberation song, and in the song there were some parts where, like, talking about the horrors and why are you doing this, and, you know, it was just, and I said, I know it's important, but I just don't think it's appropriate for this event because people are coming thinking it's just social. And I think there's other ways of doing that. Like there's this passage that's at the end of Earthlings. It says we need a wiser and more mystical way of viewing animals.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful poem and it's positive and anybody can relate to it, you know. And I also think the fact that it's just all vegan food in a way, that's like enough. You know, come there and just have a good time and get to know everybody and be that supportive and let people come forward on their own. So that's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Nancy. Great. I'll say a few words afterwards. Okay, thanks. It's great to hear from you. Yeah, Nancy's, I think you remember, she also started in Baltimore, the vegan smash-up, great hamburger, vegan hamburger smash-up, something. But Nancy's doing a lot of work in the Baltimore area, Washington, D.C. area, to bring the vegan message to people. And I think, that's important. That's true. You know, it's interesting. I just saw yesterday, I think it was, on our Facebook, we have a Wilkie-Side Facebook group, and somebody put up this wonderful link to a video, a very short, just a one-minute video of a cow who there's a woman throwing a ball to this, you know, like a big ball to this cow, and the cow is behaving like a dog. You know, as soon as she throws the dog, the cow runs after the ball. And then kicks the ball back to her, and then she throws it again, and the cow runs and gets the ball and kicks it back to her, and they play back and forth, and you know, running and kicking, and it just shows the tremendous capacity, really, of this cow to play and to interact with this woman and the agility. I mean, kicking the ball back, and you know, I mean, it's really quite remarkable that. They look so great when they're running. You know, they this big, huge body, and just they're very light on their feet. They just start running. But I was neat to read the comments, and quite a few of the comments said the same thing. They said, "Well, you know, I never considered being vegan, but after watching this, I'm going vegan, or I can see why it would be. I need to go vegan." And it was very interesting. You don't usually see that so much. I mean, quite often with things that are horrible and brutal. I mean, I guess that does work too, but I think a lot of people go vegan also when they actually dawns on them that this is a being who has a joie de vivre, right? They have a joy of living, and their life means something. There's someone in there, you know, that basic idea. The being becomes a person to them, and they can no longer take out their wallet and pay for it. So I think we need that kind of positive approach to help people see, like Beth was saying, sanctuaries are so helpful because we see the beings as beings. So, all right. Well, anyway, we're past our time, well over our time. And I want to thank everyone for your patience. And sorry we went a little over. We are on track to have our next month's World Peace Diet Circle in July on the 18th, which is going to be wonderful. It's the height of summer, and we're right now at the solstice. Tomorrow's the solstice. Tomorrow morning, I got to get up early. I'm going to be at 6:15 on a big veg fest in Budapest, Hungary. They're Skyping me in to give a one-hour lecture there. So, It's on the solstice, and it's called the Everness Festival in Budapest. And in the meantime, we'll be mainly here in California. It looks like I'm just looking at my schedule here. Yeah, the film, if you have a chance to see the film Prayer for Compassion, which I'm in, and Madeline's music is also in, we're going to be doing a film screening of that in San Francisco on Wednesday the 26th. And Madeline will be in Switzerland for a few weeks in July. I'll be speaking at the Jane Conference in L.A. And then at a wonderful, if anyone's interested, there's a wonderful up in the Sierras, a vegan festival up in the Sierras I'll be speaking for that at Pinecrest Lake. It's outdoors, it's camping, and it's all vegan. It's put on by the Vegetarian Health Institute, and that'll be the 13th to the 17th, I believe. And I think that's pretty much it. Two other things here in the Bay Area before next on the 18th. So, all right. Well, thanks everyone for joining us. It was great. Big appreciation to Beth and Daniel Redwood. Also to everyone for sharing your ideas. We have lots to think about here going forward. And wishing everyone a wonderful month. And let's just take a moment and just give thanks for this precious opportunity that we had to connect with each other and with the deeper purpose that we all share, and put forth a vision of humans and animals, all of us celebrating our lives on this beautiful and abundant earth as we are intended to here, in harmony together, in peace and health, knowing that we're part of this awakening as best we can be, part of the solution, embodying what veganism is in our daily lives with kindness and respect for all beings, and speaking our truth boldly and authentically, planting seeds with every conversation that we have, and giving thanks that we have this precious human life to do this. So I'll close with a short piece of music. This is Davis Swirl. I'll do the Lamb song right now. Okay, this is the Lamb song. Enjoy. Thanks again.